Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Till Nick 10 continues right now. Hour number two brought to you by Larry Miller and Sit and Sleep. He'll beat anyone's advertised price. Your mattress is free. I've got some great tickets for Cool and the Gang with the Village People or the Fifth Dimension at the Rose, a great venue in Pasadena to give you. I'll tell you when to call for that. Lots to discuss with you. 800-222-5222 is a phone number, but I want to kick off the hour with Jack Abramoff, who we haven't talked to in a long time, former lobbyist, producer, author of Capital Punishment, The Hard Truth About Washington Corruption from America's Most Notorious Lobbyist. Good morning, Jack. How are you?
Peter, how are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah, we haven't talked to you in a while. You been good?
I've been great. I've been great. Freezing my you-know-what off here in Washington.
Oh, yeah. The East Coast. I talked to somebody in New York yesterday who said it's insanely cold and really inclement weather right now. So Senate leaders announced a two-year budget deal. Yay, congratulations. Now the House is going to go where on this thing? Because Nancy Pelosi is said it doesn't include a Dreamers element in here. Also, you have a caucus that's going to say we don't agree with spending this much money. I mean, we're, you know, the fiscal hawks are going to say this is insane. It's outrageous. The conservatives in the House are going to say it raises spending by $300 billion over the next 2 years. So how are they going to resolve this? And the White House wants it. They want it done now.
Right. I think the odds are that they'll find some way to do this. This is a major breakthrough and victory out of the Senate. And the House is, you know, Ryan's got a tough job ahead of him cobbling together the votes that are needed. Just because Pelosi is saying whatever she's saying doesn't necessarily mean they can't pass it through the House. They don't have a 60-vote rule or 60% rule in the House. They just have to get a majority. So the question is going to become, how do they corral the Republicans? I think you correctly identified on the right. People are concerned with some of these numbers, busting through some of these numbers. But having said that, you know, Republicans have tended to go along at this point with their leadership minus 10 or 15 here and there on key votes. So let's see what they do. But right now, the people I'm talking to feel that they're going to work this out and get this through.
The interesting thing, too, is General Mattis was on. He kicked off the press conference by talking about the budget and the uncertainty of these continuing resolutions and how you can't budget the military and how they want to send young men and women to Afghanistan and put them in harm's way. And all of this uncertainty is detrimental to the military, which made me think for a second, which is kind of interesting. For the first time, the Pentagon has redacted portions of the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction Report. So we don't know really what's going on in Afghanistan and what the plan is in Afghanistan, because it looks like that President Trump is doing the same thing as his two predecessors, except in a smaller way. We're not hearing about Afghanistan and putting people in harm's way and what the plan is.
Well, I think, you know, obviously Afghanistan is part of it, but I think Mattis's main point and the point that's been made by the defense conservatives, really through the entire continuing resolution parade, which has gone on now for a couple of years, is that because of the sequester, because of the act that basically pulled all this money out of the defense budget a few years ago, and that is the current rule, because of the sequester, our defenses are not adequately funded, not just Afghanistan, everywhere. We don't have an adequate amount of money being spent on defense. And that became a political reality, Peter, because the defense appropriation conservatives and Republicans were saying, we're not going to go along with a series of continuing resolutions that just go forever, which doesn't deal with the sequester and doesn't deal with the fact that our military overall is not funded enough. And I think that's the point that Mattis made both the other day and earlier.
But are they, Jack, but are they obscuring what's going on in Afghanistan? Are we not hearing?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that, you know, what's going on in Afghanistan obviously is complex. And they need to some degree. Trump also made it very clear when he was running. He's not going to be announcing everything they're doing because they do it to the enemy. And this was an Obama administration folly to be able to announce basically what they're going to do all the time. So I don't necessarily think they're obscuring it. But again, Peter, I don't think that's the main issue.
No, I got it. It just, the redaction was kind of interesting. The other thing is, as we talk about military budget, we can move on to a bunch of other stuff. At the same time, we're talking about all this, and it isn't the biggest story, but it was interesting that the president apparently told the Pentagon that he wants to have a military parade in Washington, in front of the Capitol, which, by the way, tanks would tear up the street. One tank would tear up the street there, and the cost of it would be enormous. And the White House is saying it's to honor the military. The pushback on Twitter was like it moved up to the number three or two the number on Twitter as far as people responding, saying, "Are you kidding me? Why are we doing this? This would be a party for him rather than respect for the military." Would that really happen? As we're talking about all this budget, they would spend that kind of budget to do a parade?
Well, I think you're misunderstanding the parade, Peter. It's actually the first part of the infrastructure reconstruction. All right, where they're going to have the tanks go through the streets of D.C.
By the way, they look like
tanks have been going through them. I don't know if you've driven in the streets of D.C. They're terrible.
It's good to know you have the same thing we have here.
Right, exactly. We'll send them to Los Angeles afterwards, all right, and every other city. But this way they can knock out the streets, we can have an infrastructure reconstruction program, he gets his parade, and everybody wins.
Yeah. What's your guess, if you had to guess, parade or no parade?
Well, it depends on the bands that are going to lead it and things like that. Who knows? I mean, right now, by the way, just so you know, the parade thing was kind of a ha-ha in the city. But the thing everyone is talking about here is this revelation of the text with Obama likely knowing what they were doing.
So, okay, let's give context.
Discussion going on in town.
So this is the Peter Strzok, Lisa Page text. We know them as the lovebirds, the FBI lovebirds. And they continue to release more of these texts. And then the newest revealed text between Strzok and Page included an exchange about preparing talking points for the then FBI director, James Comey, to give to President Obama, who wanted to know everything we're doing. So, and they both worked for the special counsel, Robert Mueller, and of course he was let go. So this does raise questions about the involvement in the Clinton email investigation. Now, the answer back is supposedly that this had to do with him wanting to know what was happening with Russia and how they were impacting the election. But the big question here for me was...
Right. And by the way, Nixon wanted to know what the light bulb count at the Watergate Hotel was.
That is not an
answer back, by the way. This thing is growing on these guys.
But the other question that's interesting is why Comey, who was informed by the investigative team October 27th, why that happened if the laptop and the emails were discovered, the texts were discovered September 28th, what the 1 month gap was. So is this going to grow into Joe always yells at me, producer, grow DEFCON 1 or 5. I never remember which is the highest. They think DEFCON 1 is the highest. DEFCON. I did say
five
con. Joe corrects me.
Yes.
I'm saying
you
con every time. I'm not saying con. With my accent, Joe always says say con, not common. I'm saying con. So how big is this going to get?
Well, first of all, by the way, it's D.C., so it's definitely con, not com. But this could be calamitous for the Democrats in the following way. The more they throw in with Adam Schiff and the people who are defending all this stuff and trying to, you know, fight back on this versus cut your losses, Democrats, say, yeah, the past guys are bad guys. They're clinging to this past group of their people and clinging to protecting the FBI, which, by the way, can't possibly be a winner among the left in the country. The more they do that, the more they're setting themselves up for what they don't know what's coming down the pike. You have these lovebirds texts and everything else that's coming out now. Who knows what's next? I mean, if we're now finding out that Obama may have known about this, he is now Richard Milhouse Obama. And that's coming. And so, you know, I don't have to tell you what the Republicans felt like in 1974 after Watergate. But Democrats are blowing their opportunity, I think, in 2018, all right, with all of this by their approach to this, which is this counterattack. If they have to get ahead of this, they got to get around it and somehow get it off.
Who's leading the Democrats' assault? Because my question is this: you got Nancy Pelosi betting that they're going to take the House in this next election. And I'm looking at the numbers that have already been halved as far as their chances of taking the House. And we know what polling's been like recently, that the polls are not worth that much. Look at the national election. What happens to the Democratic Party if they don't take the House? I mean, the fight there is going to be immense. And even if they do, the party is at a feud with themselves. The youngers are gone after the elders. She's holding on like you can't believe, and she does a lot of fundraising, a big fundraising. She's important. What's going to happen, and who's doing the messaging for the Democrats?
Well, I it seemed like Adam Schiff is doing their messaging, which is very difficult, since if you look at him, he sort of looks like Don Knotts.
Oh, stop. See, now you're doing personal, now you're doing personal attacks.
See, yeah, well, of course, this is the Trump era. We always go personal now. You know, they go high, we go you know, that kind of thing. But no, I mean, you've got Adam Schiff, who's got this kind of aggressive messaging on this thing, which is not playing. That's who's doing the message. The problem with the Democrats is they can't seem to evolve into the Democrats 2.0. They're stuck in this old boat. Pelosi, Hillary's still hanging around, for God's sakes. All right, somebody ought to kidnap her and take her away. If you're a Democrat, move her to Senegal. Do something with Hillary. Get her off the scene. Get rid of the Clintons. But they're not doing that. And instead, what you've got are this sort of old hag, you know, situation with Democrats, and you've got this these young radicals on the other side. And the American people probably are looking at this going, eh, I don't know. And in fact, what's going on is you have Donald Trump, who is ironically, and who would have thought this, uniting the Republican Party. I mean, who would have thought we'd be talking right now, having the election a year plus ago and the inauguration a year and a little bit ago, who would have thought a year later we'd be sitting here thinking we have a united Republican Party and a Democratic Party at each other's throats?
And it's Jack, okay, bizarre. How does the Russian investigation weigh into this? We now have also the Democratic response to the Republican Nunes response. And from what I'm guessing is they put a lot of stuff in there that's to be redacted so that they can claim the message is not getting out there. It was totally redacted and they don't want you to see it. And then I go and look at the polling, and what you find out is most of the public really doesn't care. 3 in 10 voters say that they think the contents of the memo drafted by the staff of the House Intelligence Committee Chairman Nunes are mostly true, and 22% think the contents are mostly false. Nearly 48%, almost half, don't know or have no opinion. So meaning it's not sticky. It's just the public is hearing so many contradictory stories that they go, yeah, wake me when the Mueller investigation is done. So it's not getting a lot of heat. But they're playing it like it's life and death.
Well, they, unfortunately, because of the tack they're taking as a party, which is all in on the, you know, take over the House through the investigation, and then we'll do an impeachment, and all of these, in my view, very dumb political strategies, instead of formulating some sort of policy, some sort of vision of America, and projecting it, a positive vision of America that they could unite their forces and bring over people in the middle. Instead of doing that, they're playing this other hand, which, frankly, I think is a losing hand against Donald Trump. Talk about a Teflon president. You know, he used to call Reagan and Clinton Teflon presidents. They're nothing compared to this guy. I mean, you have a report that the president of the United States allegedly paid off a porn star, okay, you know, and this comes out, you know, he did it last year, and it's not even on page 5 of most newspapers. So he is the Teflon president. You can't seem to lay a glove on this guy, folks. Figure out a new strategy, or you'll lose to him. You'll continue to lose to him.
When you're watching as they try and figure out the strategy, the other thing is, I'm reading today that the president is very frustrated in the West Wing, that nobody's got his back in a big way. I mean, Bannon's gone. He was a fighter. Lewandowski's gone. He was kind of a fighter. And it looks like he would like Jason Miller in the strategist position. Are you hearing that, too?
Well, you know, there's two things to remember here. First of all, that he's got a bit of a tumultuous operation all the time. This is how he manages, through tumult, okay? And number two, that there is an aggressive, and has been from the beginning, effort on the part of his insiders to throw out things that are just not accurate to the media to basically play that game. It's a weird game, but they did it even during the campaign. They would throw out the most absurd leaks, all right, which would get picked up. He'd then deny them. They turned out to be false, and the media would look like they're lying. And so, to some degree, the description of what really goes on inside the Oval Office and the West Wing has been inaccurate, including, by the way, some of the stuff that even was in the book of the guy who was sitting in there. So it's hard to know, and frankly, I'm not sure it really matters, because people at this point, again, they've checked off the box. Things are going to be tumultuous in the Trump White House. Big deal.
All right, so let me ask you this as far as strategy. It said that the outsiders outside of the White House are pushing for the president to get an immigration deal so he can show there's real progress toward the wall and that the base will be motivated. The other side says, you know what, don't do that. Sign for an extension for DACA so that the immigration deal will motivate the base during the election, which is the right way to go.
I'm not sure there is a right way to go on that. And I don't know that they've come to the right way to go on it. Obviously, you want to make sure your base is motivated. And most important, I think, politically for Trump, is that he shows that he's done everything he can to build that wall, because that was such an incredible cornerstone of his campaign. So he's got to be able to say, I wanted to build the wall. I did these 15 things to build the wall. And here's how they stopped me, if he's not going to do it. And in terms of the DACA thing, I think that, again, among his base, the obviously people generally in the country we see in the polling want to have the DACA thing sorted out. But not everybody in Trump's base really cares to have it sorted out. And there's this kind of parade of people who have been are immigrants, by the way. And they were just in the last couple of days, some of them, who have suffered as a consequence of the DACA situation. So I think that it's not clear there's a right way to work it out. I think for Trump, though, the sine qua non for him, the thing that he must do is ensure that people believe truly that he is trying to get that wall built and that somebody else is stopping it.
Hey, Jack, with 1 minute left to go, what happens with Mueller? If he decides not to, he's saying, I'd like to talk to Mueller. His lawyers are saying, don't talk to Mueller. I'm reading and hearing that there are compromises they're trying to work out where he won't have to appear. He can do it in writing. If Mueller decides to subpoena him, this means a protracted fight, which goes possibly to the Supreme Court, drags it out to infinity, which is not a good thing. When you're trying to do a reelection campaign, when you're trying to do midterms, where do you want to guess where this is going to go?
Well, I look at it like this. It is, if Trump fires Mueller, that's a bad thing for Trump politically. I think he'd get over it, but I think it'd be a bad thing for him. If Mueller subpoenas Trump, I think that's a bad thing for Mueller.
Why?
I think that they, well, I'll tell you why. Because he starts to look like an aggressive, over-aggressive prosecutor. And that will become the meme coming from the other side. And that will hurt Mueller as much as all the rest of the stuff has been hurting Mueller. So I think that if Mueller subpoenas Trump, politically, it's going to shift in Trump's favor.
So you think they'll reach a compromise?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know whether Trump feels he should reach a compromise. I don't know what they're thinking is, Peter, because I'm not privy to this discussion.
But yeah, but you know how Washington works.
Yeah, but it's not just how Washington works. How Trump and his team works, okay? They look to basically bring people in and sucker punch them, okay? I mean, look at the whole DACA offer to the Democrats, Peter. I mean, was that not the greatest sucker punch of all time? You're offering more DACA participants than they asked for. They asked for, was it 800,000? You offer them 2 million? All right, and they're screaming no. A lot of people in town believe that Trump purposely did that to sucker punch them.
No, so I hear you.
Trump,
I hear you. I just
incredibly good at it. I think with Mueller, they may drive Mueller to subpoena him and then turn it into a political fight with Mueller.
Incredible. Jack,
and I don't think that hurts Trump.
Thanks. I mean, you do know how Washington works, and it's an ugly, boy, it's a tough game in Washington, man. Jack Abramoff, former lobbyist, producer, author of Capital Punishment, The Hard Truth About Washington Corruption from America's Most Notorious Lobbyists. Twitter at Jack Abramoff, the website abramoff.com. Jack, we'll talk to you again. Stay warm, and we'll see you later.
Thanks, Peter.
Talk Radio 790 KBC. Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tilden at 10, continues right now. Hey, if you're a flat earther, call me, 800-222-5222, because Elon Musk sent up his Falcon Heavy from Cape Canaveral, which was amazing, history-making, and sent back photos of the Earth, the round Earth. By the way, I think I read that the flat earther, he couldn't get his rocket off the ground, the guy who was getting a lot of attention, that he wanted to prove the Earth was flat. Who are these people? 800-222-5222. Take me on. Prove to me that the Earth is still flat. People are mixed. A lot of people blown away by what Elon Musk has managed to do. Because it's amazing the power of this thing. The fact that it went up to this Falcon Heavy thing. And the fact that he's got his Tesla in there. Some people going, really? He's got a Tesla convertible in there? Great. So you want to cross promote? I think go for it. The thing, I think it overshot the Mars orbit. So it's not in Mars orbit. It's on its way to an asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. But still fascinating that he can do this for so much cheaper than the government can do it. What a surprise that is. But we'll talk about that. I got some more information on Elon Musk and some questions I want to ask you. Because part of his growing empire is fueled by almost $5 billion in government subsidies, which is fascinating. And also, as good as this was, the rocket launch, and it was big time. I think it's the second most viewed on YouTube event. So that's pretty huge. But he also, this is the same guy who last month did a flamethrower sale. Hello. That's just when we need after the record wildfires. This guy is selling flamethrowers to people. Is that really the smartest thing you could do? 800-222-5222. Peter Till in the 10 continues after this.
KABC News is live and local at 11:30. I'm Jeff Whittle, and we do have some news out of the White House. That Secretary of the White House, Staff Secretary Rob Porter, a top aide to President Trump, will resign after being accused of abuse by his two ex-wives. Porter denies the allegations and will step down over the objections of White House Chief of Staff John Kelly and others, that according to a White House official. Also, the fate of Pico Rivera High School teacher who criticized the military has yet to be determined, even though he was found guilty by the public last night.
The overwhelming majority of those who went to the El Rancho Unified School Board meeting said high school teacher and city councilman Gregory Salcido has to go.
Well, you wisely reject the behavior and say no more to Gregory Salcido.
To hear a teacher who is supposed to educate in all aspects of life belittle me and my family, I was enraged.
The school board, however, says Salcido still has the right of due process during the investigation. Salcido was caught on video bashing military service members and mocking students wearing a Marine sweatshirt. In Pico Rivera, James Rojas, KABC News.
A pedestrian was struck and killed by a vehicle on Bristol Street in Santa Ana around 6 o'clock this morning. The name of the victim, a man in his 60s, has not been released. The driver remained at the scene and was interviewed by police. And Las Vegas casino mogul Steve Wynn resigned as chairman and CEO of Wynn Resorts amid sexual misconduct allegations. Last month, the Wall Street Journal reported that one sexual harassment claim against Wynn led to a $7.5 million settlement. The story prompted him to resign as Republican National Committee's finance chief. Now, Wynn's denied the allegations and attributes them to a smear campaign led by his ex-wife. Talk Radio 790 KABC Sports. Lakers eclipse the Suns 112-93 thanks to 26 points from Brandon Ingram. Purple and gold host Oklahoma City tomorrow. Clippers visit Blake Griffin and the Pistons Friday. Ducks beat the Sabres 4-3 in overtime last night in Buffalo. LA Kings host the Edmonton Oilers tonight, 7 p.m. right here on KABC. And the Kings, they have fallen to fifth place in the Pacific Division despite winning 3 of 4. And that's sports on the home of the LA Kings, 790 KABC. Traffic, a market check, weather, and more Till in the 10 next. KBC News Time, 11:33.
Talk Radio 790 KBC. Peter Till in the 10 continues, and Marshall wants to talk. Marshall, you're on Talk Radio. Good morning. What do you want to say?
Two things. First, I wanted to thank you for the Paul Anka tickets a few weeks ago. That show was terrific.
Very welcome.
If anybody has never seen him in person, it's a really good show.
Very cool.
Okay. And the second thing I was going to tell you about the SpaceX thing is that, well, you know how guys try to impress girls and they have Corvettes or other cars that, you know, kind of compensate for right. some other stuff? Well, Elon Musk has able to kind of step it up a little bit higher, and he's able to do a rocket ship.
You got Johnny Depp's wife. I mean, you know, you're shooting for the moon on both ends, Mars and Moon.
Yep.
I'm thrilled that you called, Marshall, but I'm really depressed that I didn't get any flat earthers. I love talking to flat earthers because nothing you say, thank you, Marshall, nothing you say is going to deter them. By the way, his $5 billion in government subsidies, what's going to be fascinating to watch is whether those companies, the solar company and whether Tesla, are going to get to self-sufficiency. They've been around for about a decade, and the stocks are through the roof, even though they don't make money. And his stake in them are about $10 billion. So, I mean, yes, he's moving ahead with electric cars, and he's now doing a battery thing. I think a battery that will store and break all kinds of, past records as far as how much battery storage you can do at what kind of prices. It'd be great to see. But again, I wonder how long, because the subsidies are going to run out on Tesla in a bit. SpaceX, meanwhile, he does have competition. You know, he's trying to impress. He's trying to impress Jeff Bezos, because Jeff Bezos has got his own company. I think it's called Blue Origin. And he's planning, you know, he gave him kudos yesterday on his space shot, but I'm sure Bezos saw the space shot and then got on the phone to his people and went, dude, we gotta beat it bigger, bigger, harder, longer, that whole bit. So it's a war. We can benefit. We can benefit. The other thing before I get out of here, though, today that I want to ask you is, what do we need to do when I see an injustice and I see that it's wrong? I'm trying to figure out what we can do to make some noise with this Recycle LA thing. It's like high-speed rail. When you see it, you go, "This is, it's just an egregious waste." You got these new trash recycling programs, and I know Doug talked about it briefly this morning. Where you're getting the best of the best. They study this, the city studies it, and what they give you is an increase in price and a reduction in service. How, I don't understand how that works or why we put up with it. There was a meeting last night, Tuesday's Los Angeles City Council meeting, where there were a lot of people up there voicing their concern. But I get that we want to divert trash from landfills and reduce the number of trucks and pollution. But here you go. The city, after studying this, this didn't come out of somebody's butt. They studied this, apparently, and they signed a 10-year contract with these seven companies. And some of them are disputing the overcharging allegations. But you got all these added fees. You have added fees when they got to move a trash can. They got to move, open a gate. And I have friends who send me pictures every day of uncollected trash and bills that are three times, four times, five times higher. And now you got, apparently, Mitch O'Farrell and Koretz and Bonin are saying that they were sold a bill of goods. Well, you were there when they were negotiating. What were you, sleep in chambers? You weren't there. You didn't read. You didn't look. You didn't see. Supposedly, Miguel Santana, who was the former city administration officer, recommended against Recycle LA. And you go, well, why would he do that? And he said that all the wage and environmental objectives could have been met and all of the fees and the dollars controlled by just creating competitions in different regions. Instead, what do they do? They ignored it. Why did they ignore it? Well, I think part of it is that there's no transparency here, and they're using some of these franchise fees. They're kicked back, and they're treated as a tax, and they're diverted to the general fund. So I want to know, how do we make noise? We really got to start making noise and saying, no, 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 it's enough of this. Our services are diminishing, our costs are going up, and you just got another tax, and people can't afford it anymore. Why not analyze this? Why not use some transparency here? Or are we locked in? Because this is going to just keep ballooning and ballooning and ballooning. So I would like to know what the plan is, or do we just sit back and shut up and let them charge us more, take it, let them divert money to the general fund as a backdoor tax and go, okay, look, they got us, and then they're able to do it next time. I would like to do something to draw attention to this other than going down to City Hall and standing up and complaining in front of a couple of city councilmen who knew it was coming anyway and them saying, yeah, it's horrible, we'll look into it, as they take more money to divert to the general fund. It's insane. It's a holdup, and it's not right that we get less service for more money and we're locked into it for 10 years. And then I think the way they orchestrated this too is, if they try and cut the contracts, I think they'll be sued by the sanitation company. So you got a great idea, you call me with it. Also, the third caller right now gets Fifth Dimension at the Rose, or Cool and the Gang and the Village People at the Pacific Amphitheater, 800-222-5222. Again, Dino will give the third caller your choice of the tickets. We'll be right back. Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tilden at 10 continues, and I congratulate Maureen Riverside, who apparently is over the moon. If she got tickets to see the Fifth Dimension at the Rose in Pasadena on February 15th, congratulations. Enjoy the show. I'm bringing this up now. Hopefully we can discuss it a little more tomorrow, because it looks like the LA Times is selling their paper to Patrick Sunshine, who is a physician and a billionaire. And he's got this company called Nant Health. And you look at this and you say, wow, you go across the country, billionaires are buying papers. Warren Buffett believes that papers are going to have a resurgence, at least online, because they carry local information. It's hard to get local information from national sources, that people want to know when the ball game's happening, what's happening in your hometown, in your own backyard. But the newest is this gentleman who's buying this paper. Of course, aside from Buffett, you also have Bezos with the Post. You have Bloomberg, of course. And you have Carlos Slim owns, I think, 20% of the New York Times. And I gotta wonder, when you read the surveys and the polls that so many people doubt the news sources that they get, I wonder if you question the fact that billionaires across the country are investing in papers because, A, it's a passion thing for them, or B, because they see there is a potential of growth online for credible news sources, or C, is there something a little uglier and below the surface, which is, hey, if I'm being investigated, I'm a billionaire, I have a lot of companies, maybe the paper will look a little more lightly, go a little bit more lightly on going after me. And, you know, you look up Mr. Sung Sung's background, and there are a bunch of fraud suits by investors after some of their stocks tanked. Even Cher claims he and others duped her in selling shares. But they, if you're a billionaire, I'm sure that you've ticked off some people along the way, and there's issues. In the back of your head, if you're a publisher of a paper, you're never supposed to take that into consideration. But when you're thinking the guy who's writing the checks, the guy who owns it, there's a story about him. All I'll tell you is the only time that I've ever been told in my career not to talk about something was done very gently. And it wasn't where they came in and said, don't talk about it. But an owner of the company that I worked for basically said, feel free to talk about the issue with the parent company. However, there are also so many other important stories, maybe more important, that you want to discuss, which I took as a very gentle push to say, don't talk about it. So I won't mention the company, but was the only time, nobody's ever done it since. But I just wonder, when you're the publisher of a paper and you're making a good coin and you know that your boss is a billionaire and his company is being investigated, if that goes in a big font, a giant Helvetica on the front page, or if it's buried on page 97 underneath, you know, bra ads and ads for tires. I would think I'd like to hope that the investigation is done unbiased, but man, today the cross-pollination of editorial and advertorial seems to be a pretty blurred line, and so many people are questioning already the media and the news that they get. When you have billionaires owning these papers, who else is going to invest them at this point and think it's a good future bet for them? Are they also really doing it as an instrument for their ideology and to be protected from having these papers going after them and investigating? We can explore that some more tomorrow, or maybe Dr. Drew will do that next. And they're going to do Crosstalk with Dr. Drew and Lawrence Savant next year on Talk Radio 790 KBC.